Welcome to In Our Nature, the UW Sustainability Podcast. I'm Damon Eklund, Communication Manager for UW Sustainability. I'm joined today by Norm Minter, the Assistant Director for Energy, Utilities, and Operations with UW Facilities. Norm's been at UW for about 21 years, and since 2013 has managed our energy conservation programs. Welcome, Norm.
Thanks, Damon.
So today we're going to talk a lot about kind of energy conservation at UW, what that looks like, what that means, and why it's important. But first off, just tell us more about what your role at the UW is, and your background, and how you got here.
Yeah, as you said, I've been here for quite some time. Originally, I was trained as an architect, and I was involved in architectural design practice for 10 years of first part of my career. I moved over to the public sector to be a project manager in the 1990s. And when I started at the UW in 2001, I managed a couple projects that had sustainability and LEED involvement or LEED certification. And I became known as the sustainability guy within capital projects for some reason. And so from that, I stood up a ESCO program and managed our ESCO contracts for about 10 years. And then in 2013, as you said, I moved over to facilities to actually manage our conservation programs and have been doing that since.
And when we talk about energy conservation, let's start with what UW has been doing since 2013 or the last few recent years. What does energy conservation look like? And when we say energy conservation programs, what are we talking about?
So energy conservation is really a operational support program. So the buildings, when they're built, generally are commissioned thoroughly by the construction and design teams so that they operate in an optimal fashion. So we're mainly talking about the moving parts of a building. The heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems of buildings use most of the energy in the building, along with lighting and other process loads in our science buildings, of course. But the HVAC systems are really the primary driver of energy use. So a resource conservation program supports during the operational phase of the building, during the 30 to 50 years of life of that building, we manage the corrections, the processes, the construction projects that make sure that the building stays well-tuned and uses only as much energy as it needs. That's basically a resource conservation program. The essential five components of a resource conservation program are, one, the physical components of the HVAC system. These large buildings have fairly complicated heating and cooling systems in them. We move a lot of air through the buildings. The air needs to be heated and or cooled, sometimes dehumidified, to get to the right atmosphere for the various uses within the building. And all that process requires moving pieces and parts. There are coils with fluids in them at different temperatures with valves that regulate the flow. There are dampers which change where air is coming from. There are different speeds in which fans and motors can run. And all of that is the subject of the resource conservation program. So we do a lot of investigation into the existing components and do repairs to those components as they're needed. That's one. Second, there's a control system that controls the HVAC system, kind of like your thermostat at home. This DDC or direct digital control system on an HVAC system is a sophisticated digital electronic program that makes all those moving components operate in an optimal fashion. So we can look at those systems, we can improve the existing control system by loading new software, replacing older legacy software, but there are also hardware pieces associated with it. And that's where we really get into the big energy savings is in the third area, which is our older buildings have fairly unsophisticated and mechanical HVAC systems. But today, modern HVAC systems have a lot of digital control components. So we install variable frequency drives, we insert carbon dioxide sensors into the airstream, and then build control sequences that can help manage the flow of air to reduce waste even more. And then finally, there are also, you know, opportunities around water. Our conservation programs also manage our water waste and try to eliminate water waste throughout campus. And that mainly looks like additional metering, looking at the big users of water like our cooling towers, and making improvements in those systems to reduce waste.
And so can you give a few examples of some of the programs that have happened at UW and what those look like in the buildings?
A simple example of a conservation project that has borne great fruit over the recent past is we have many older buildings in our Magnuson Health Sciences complex where the fans, the ventilation systems, were built in the 1960s to industry standards of that time. And over the intervening 50 years, you can imagine the state of the industry has changed a lot. And so we have been able to go into those mechanical rooms, install variable frequency drives and new motors onto these fans that allow us then to vary the amount of energy and the amount of air that flows through the system given the occupancy. So we monitor occupancy using CO2 sensors. So in a library, you can imagine that if the library is very busy, there's a lot of people in the library, these CO2 sensors sense the occupancy. They send that signal back to the control system. The control system turns the fan up, increases the amount of ventilation, and people are comfortable and healthy. At other times when the library is not well occupied, the fan can ramp down, reduce the amount of air that flows through it, and we can save a lot of energy. These are some of the strategies that we've been implementing over the last 7 years through this program that have reduced energy significantly on campus.
So I know that over a number of years, you and your teams have looked at different buildings, different areas on campus, and have identified some of the different things that can or need to be done. And I'm just kind of curious, right now, what are some of the main opportunities we have on campus? When you're looking at energy conservation, what are we looking at?
Well, the primary focus of our program today is to eliminate all this older legacy building control systems and modernize the control systems to current state. It's also putting in place a campus-wide supervisory control type system where all the building's HVAC controls can be managed at a central location. That reduces the number of people who we need to hire to maintain the buildings, but it also really improves the work that those operators can do because we can get much richer data about what the building is doing. That's what's really happening today that's really exciting in the industry, kind of this big data opportunity to manage our buildings through better technology.
And I know just being in some of the discussions around energy conservation, the benefits of reducing our energy use are, there's a number of things, and one of them is depending on what kind of energy we're talking about, you know, it can lower our carbon footprint, it can lower the electricity use, and you know that has also a bottom line. If we're using less electricity, that the university doesn't have to buy that electricity from our suppliers. And so when we're looking at these programs, what do those numbers look like in terms of, you know, the amount we're paying for some of these projects and what we can expect to save in those utility costs?
Right. So the university every year, the Seattle campus, consumes about $18 million worth of electricity and natural gas. That's a tremendous amount of money leaving the university. Resource conservation at its heart is a scheme to reduce the amount of money that we spend on utilities and instead turn that money into capital improvements within our existing buildings that reduce their energy waste. So in a way, it pays for itself, right? Because it's just a matter of making the right improvements in your buildings, and then you can harvest those savings from what you otherwise would have paid to the utilities. So we have to date, over about the last five years, invested about $5 million, about $1 million a year in energy conservation, and we're now saving about $1 million. Our intent now is to ramp that up, to move up to a $3 million a year spend so that we can increase the amount of savings that we're getting, plow that back into efficiency. The reason that that's so important right now is that there's this major energy transformation coming up.
That actually does touch on what I was trying to get to next, which is we are looking at a plan to decarbonize the University of Washington. And when we talk about that, that's primarily that natural gas you talked about. We have a power plant that burns natural gas to create steam to heat buildings. And when we're thinking about decarbonizing and the opportunities there, what that generally we're talking about is no longer using natural gas and moving to an electrification of our heating system and also becoming more efficient. And so at the University of Washington, when we talk about electrification, our electricity, since it's mostly hydropower, generally doesn't have greenhouse gas emissions associated with it. Our electricity is generally carbon-free, which is what we're trying to get to. But we can't just use all the electricity we want. There's other reasons that we need to limit the amount of electricity as part of this project, one of which is just there's a certain amount of capacity. There's a certain amount of electricity that we're getting on campus from Seattle City Light or the capacity that we have. So when we're talking about this decarbonization effort, a lot of the attention is just on the natural gas. But I want you to talk a little bit more about just why it's so important to really look at the amount of electricity we're using as we're looking to bring a lot more things online with electricity, whether it's our heating or our vehicle fleet and moving away from fossil fuels and toward electricity. Why is it that energy conservation is really the first step and a foundation for all of that?
Right. So the fact that electricity, especially green electricity, is a resource that is limited by the amount of water that we can pass through hydroelectric dams, the number of solar panels that we can build, the number of wind turbines that we can install. And so all customers of Seattle City Light and the electrical grid in general have to be mindful of the fact that electricity, especially green electricity, is limited in supply. So a big part of our transformation strategy for our energy systems on campus is not just to, as you said, move away from burning natural gas to create heat and instead doing that work with electricity, but it's actually to reduce the amount of heating that our buildings need. And so energy conservation is the first step, right? Like, don't buy energy or don't create energy to heat a building if 20% of that is waste. Reduce the waste and only use the amount that you really need. So it's always our first strategy. And then we can get into the second strategy, which is almost all of the university's buildings are large, complex, science-related or healthcare-related buildings. And because of their environmental needs, their environmental controls within the buildings, these are what we call single-pass buildings. We warm or cool the air from the atmosphere and push it through the building to create the correct environment for those research and teaching activities. And then we exhaust that air, 100% of that air, to the atmosphere again, because we're concerned about contaminants in the airstream and we're very concerned about people's health in these critical research environments. So we have a great opportunity to actually harvest that waste that is leaving those buildings and reuse it to reheat more air in the future. And so not only does resource conservation reduce waste, but secondarily, it can improve the efficiency of the system to be able to harvest waste heat off our buildings. And we can add another 20% reduction in a building's consumption. So all that being said, that's how we are able to move from natural gas to electricity, is by dramatically increasing the efficiency of every unit of energy that we put in the building so that we don't have to use as much electricity and we can still get the same job done.
So you mentioned the university is ramping up the amount of money going into these projects, and I'm just curious, how much opportunity is there on campus? We've got to do certain things, so how much are we able to cut out the amount of energy we're using currently?
So with new regulations that have identified these targets for energy use intensity in our buildings, that is the amount of energy they use compared to other buildings that are similar to them, we can see that the university's buildings use twice as much energy than many of our peers in higher education. And so we know that that allows us a great opportunity to reduce costs and recapture these utility dollars, but it also creates a challenge that we really have to ramp up our operational programs. We have to increase the amount of metering. We've got to replace old DDC systems, and we've got to really get on top of a monitoring-based commissioning process so that we can become as efficient as our peers. There have been some recent state laws that have come into effect. We have an important law called the Climate Commitment Act, which requires all major emitters, which the university is included in that group, to reduce their carbon emissions or pay fees on our use of carbon. So that's a motivating factor that, in effect, has doubled our price for natural gas overnight. In addition, the war in Ukraine and other external issues in the fuel markets has caused natural gas to increase double in price over the last year alone. And so we're looking at natural gas prices that are dramatically increased. We have regulatory requirements besides the Climate Commitment Act. We also have what's called the Clean Buildings Performance Standard, which is a state law that requires us to reduce our energy use intensity in our buildings by 50% by 2026. So these laws, when put together, are a great motivating driver for our strategy. And our energy transformation strategy starts at its very heart, as I said earlier, with energy conservation, right? We can reduce energy use on campus by 20% just by eliminating waste. Secondarily, we're also making significant investments in our building HVAC control systems, as I mentioned earlier, direct digital controls, electronic controls, and a central monitoring system to manage those controls at a campus level are also a second very important conservation strategy. We think we can reduce, or we can increase, the efficiency of our building controls by another 10% just by having good information and being able to act upon it in near real time. We can also leverage our limited HVAC control technician labor group more effectively by being able to give them better information to act upon. And then third, we're increasing the amount of metering on campus. Some of our utilities, our steam system in particular, is very old and doesn't have all the necessary metering on it. And so we're making about $5 million investment in metering over the next 5 years to improve our awareness of where the steam is going, another strategy to ensure that we can identify all the waste and eliminate it. And then finally, there's this data analytics piece, this large data. All these sensors out in our buildings and on our utility systems bring a rich body of data back to our central control system. We have energy engineers who can then write analysis tools and analysis schemes to identify where the problems in the systems are and create these work orders that our technicians can act upon. All this in total can improve our energy efficiency over the next 7 years by 45% to get us to the required energy use intensity.
You mentioned the need to increase our metering system and look at how we're collecting information on, you know, what we're actually consuming in these buildings. What does the current state of our information look like? How much data do you have right now about our actual energy consumption and on our buildings and even on spaces within the buildings? How easy is it to identify, you know, where these issues are and the actual outcomes of these efforts?
Right. So we've stood up a centralized utility metering and monitoring system, and we have now about 30,000 meter points throughout campus that are returning information to our central control panel every 15 minutes. This gives us a significantly greater insight into where energy is being used on campus and allows us to analyze where that use is appropriate and where it's not appropriate, because we can compare this rich body of data across time. In the past, when you got a monthly bill about your energy consumption, you really couldn't tell much about whether the systems were performing properly. You could kind of see the differences between seasons, but if the values were off for a particular month, it was difficult to figure out what the problem was. Now, with all these many, many sensors in our buildings, the granularity of the data and its frequency at which you can look at it allows our energy engineers to make assessments that are much more granular and specific, so that our control techs can really go out and solve problems rather than look for problems, which is the way that it's always run in the past. So it's a significantly greater ability to operate the system continuously at an optimum state.
All right. And kind of the last thing I want to touch on is, how do you think the energy use on our campus is going to look different in 5 or 10 years? And that might be things that people on campus notice, or it might be things that, you know, only you and the people working on the interior of these buildings will kind of notice the difference. But when we're looking forward, a decade from now, what do you see that's different in terms of how we use energy?
Well, this trend that we've already begun of buildings actually just sipping energy rather than guzzling it is a trend that will only continue into the future. As technology becomes more sophisticated, as buildings become more intelligent or smart, the amount of energy needed to keep those buildings comfortable continues to go down. So that's one trend. We see less and less energy being needed in the built environment to get to the same end goal. We also see sustainable resources being a very significant change in the system. We currently burn natural gas to create heat, to heat our buildings. In the future, we will be using low-grade but sustainable sources of energy. Things like sewer heat can be recovered, and that heat can be used to supplement or reduce the amount of natural gas we need to burn. We also have a vision for other renewable sources like Lake Washington, where the temperature of the water varies throughout the column from very cold at the bottom of the lake to relatively warm at the top where the sun is heating the surface. We can use those differences in temperature to draw heat out of the lake, increase the amount of cooling that we can deliver to campus without having to use electricity to do so. And those are the big changes that we expect to see over the next 15 years.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Norm.
Thank you.